Hi, everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I am so excited today to have a conversation with my good friend Shireen Gourvani on the left.
Ooh, you're coming in with a good attitude. I like it. I'm struggling to maintain mine. Hello, yeah. Listeners. Thanks for being with us.
I'm in the political center, and John Dougal on the right.
Hey, great to be back. Looking forward to the discussion.
Yeah. So
I had somebody that approached me on Friday, said they really love the show. They love the interaction back and forth. They can tell,
we
have disagreements, and yet we're still friends, so we can.
Yeah, we need more of that in the world.
I also need to give a shout out to a listener whose name is Natalie.
Okay.
Who just said hi and loves the show. And I was worried that I just conflated that, but that is her name.
That's her name.
Hey, Natalie. Thanks for listening.
Okay, listen, I want to just do a little lightning round of a few things. I'm going to start with this notion that President Trump has launched what he called a Board of Peace. And he had a signing ceremony at Davos. The Board of Peace included like some 35 countries agreed to sign on to it. I guess you have to pay $1 billion to have a spot on the board.
Yeah.
Trump will serve as the board's chair indefinitely and have veto power over decisions. And then when you look at the group of countries that sign
on.
That
was a part that I did not know about.
Okay. Oh, yeah. You know, you've got Argentina, you've got Egypt, Indonesia, Morocco, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, UAE, if I'm missing a few.
Yeah.
But quick take, Shireen, what do you make of this?
It's also important that Hungary is the only European country to sign on, a country also run by an autocratic dictator. Mm-hmm. Just adding that in there. I think this is concerning. I'm worried that it creates a sort of shadow. I mean, what is it?
A shadow UN, a foil UN.
Yeah. And I also think it's so difficult to understand what the guiding doctrine around Trump is, other than his own grift to enrich himself. So what is the Board of Peace?
Yeah. It's a good idea, John, at least in just the notion of having a Board of Peace and people join in.
Well, especially when you talk about the problems with
United. But pay to play?
Especially with the problems with United Nations and the dysfunction you've seen there, having something exiting away from UN and having something that could be more effective. Mm-hmm. And let's be honest. I mean, it's pay to play regardless of what organization you're joining, because it takes a certain cost to run the organization. If you're really going to engage in peace, then that means you're going to have to engage proactively and not just pontificate at tables.
Yeah.
You're going to have to get boots on the ground and activities to try and promote peace and bring peace about. And I get this comes out of the Israeli-Gaza conflict.
Uh-huh.
And while some want to declare victory, the war is over, I'm cautiously optimistic that's true, but time will have to say whether that's really the case. And there's a lot of work that has to be done to bring lasting and meaningful peace. We've seen Russia's attack on Ukraine and the inability to find peace there.
Same thing in Venezuela, I might add. That time will tell. Hey, also at the World Economic Forum, you had Trump announcing this framework of a future deal for Greenland. I guess a lot of people were happy to see him kind of back off this notion of military action. But it does have these things of the U.S. getting mineral rights in Greenland and help with this Golden Dome missile defense system. John, is this like 5D chess again? Where he comes out with something with a lot of bravado and then in the end gets a good deal for the U.S.?
Some folks think it's Trump 5D chess, it's the greatest negotiation ever, and others are saying taco, Trump always chickens out. Stock market crashed and he backed away so quickly. And right now, there's so few details, you can't really quite tell. I mean, it is Trump style to throw anything out there and to make a big deal and then to claim victory. And maybe there's some good aspects of it, and maybe there's things which is just making clear what we already had.
Mm-hmm.
I think Greenland is critical for our national defense, and so that's important. But I don't know yet what all he accomplished.
Yeah.
I mean, just reemphasizing exactly what you said, John, the fact that the stock market crash seemed to have an impact on this president. Again, I think the grift is the point, right? As long as he stays enriched. But I do want to just take a second to say, as much as I heard about the declining mental state of Joe Biden, I listened to quite a bit of this, and watching Trump repeatedly refer to Greenland as Iceland. Did you catch it?
Yeah, I saw that.
This was a mess. This was a total, I don't know that this person,
I can't imagine what it feels like to be the National Security Advisor or the Secretary of State and the president's doing that.
Yeah.
It's one thing to do it once.
No, repeatedly.
But multiple times.
Yeah.
And then in this context where you're going after a country, you should get it down.
Very confused. And I do worry, again, that layers onto, there is no clear Trump doctrine. And now I do believe that we're dealing with somebody whose mental capacity is slipping.
So two more really quickly. One, we've got a trilateral talks in Abu Dhabi between Russia, Ukraine, and U.S. negotiators. I'm happy to see this.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can get this, land this plane.
Oh, yeah. So I think the notion here, right, is that it would broker some sort of peace deal. I think there's still a lot of questions about taking a side that says that Ukraine has to give up any of their sovereign land. I'm concerned again about this, and I'm worried. I don't think this is going to work. But
John, you have to be optimistic
to see.
No, I don't have optimism.
Okay, yeah, I think we're
the simple fact is Putin wins by stalling and delaying. The more he can delay, the more he wins. And so to me, it's just more of his stall tactic.
So
yes, I'll engage, we'll talk, but he's already made clear if he doesn't get land, there's no deal. There's no lasting peace if he doesn't get land.
Yeah.
And I think to say he gets land is like a non-starter if I'm Ukrainians. Mm-hmm. It's like, what did we do? We didn't do anything, and you attacked us, and now you're trying to claim that you get this land.
Yeah.
And what Putin wants is he wants all the land Russia had, plus the land he's taken in Ukraine, plus more. I mean, he wants to create the USSR again. That's his agenda. That's his vision.
Okay. Okay, there's one other one, but what they all hold in common, all these things we're talking about, but the U.S. officially left the World Health Organization last week. The commonality of all these things is it's dealing with NATO, the UN, the World Health Organization. These are institutions, what would we call best practices, a world order that is fraying, that's falling apart. And I mean, I'm one of those.
It's been fraying for decades, so let's be honest. It has been fraying for a long time.
When I worked in Washington, I remember being invited to a NBA basketball game with the World Health Organization. They were in town and there was a box and I got to go have, watch a game and interact with these people. And it felt strong to me then, John. I mean, it felt like it was still doing something really big and important. We were using it to take care of the bird flu, the avian flu and suppress it. So I'm with you that it's been, institutions have been in decline, but like it is accelerated.
Okay. And I may say Trump's saying out loud what others were thinking quietly, but for decades there's been concerns about United Nations and that it's dysfunctional.
Sure.
What does it really do, and why is the U.S. part of it, and why are we buttressing so much when these small countries or whatever it might be get these privileges at our expense? And so long before Trump came on the world stage, there had been concerns expressed about these organizations.
Yeah.
And so, I think Trump is clear. He sees little to no value in them.
Yeah.
I see some value, but I also recognize there's been long-term concerns.
Right.
I see value. I mean, in particular with the World Health Organization, it was critical when I was serving in the Peace Corps as a global guiding force around best practices. Mm-hmm. And there's a quote from Dr. Thomas Frieden, who's the former head of the CDC and prevention, really said that this is a grave error. And I think this stands out to me. He said, health threats do not respect borders, and weakening global cooperation makes Americans less safe.
Interesting.
That is true. I mean, that is true.
So there's a really interesting column in the New York Times by David French, where he talks about the preservation of the republic requires us to be double-minded.
Mm.
And the first mind is that you have to respond to the moment. These threats to NATO, what's happening on our college campuses, the border being out of control in the past. But then you have the other part of the mind is you have to rethink and rebuild the institutions.
Mm.
And he's acknowledging that the institutions are so vital to our success. So you have to both be in the moment and fix things and at the same time build a better future.
Yeah.
I recommend the column.
And I agree with you. I think institutions are critical and vital. And I'm not sure I would view Trump as an institutionalist of any sense.
Yes.
He's a disruptor.
Okay. It's such a hard transition, but we need to talk about ICE and Minnesota. Mm. Alex Pretty, ICU nurse, 37-year-old, U.S. citizen, legally carrying a weapon, and he gets shot on the streets of Minneapolis by an ICE agent while he's trying
Border Patrol, I think.
Border Patrol, while he's trying to help someone
get up
who just got sprayed with pepper spray.
Yep.
Wow. Where do you guys want to take this one? Because what I'm seeing is that what was a strength to the Trump administration, this idea of trying to control the borders, because of the way he's handling mass deportations, it's becoming a political liability. And I don't think the American public takes well to a strategy that does this. We're not talking about hotel maids and gardeners when we're talking about the border.
Right.
We want to talk about criminals.
Right.
Thoughts?
This was a state-sanctioned execution in the streets of Minneapolis. There's no other way for me
That's
to...
Those are strong comments.
Say
I wouldn't call it state-sanctioned.
Okay.
But
really? Well, okay. So I'll just also say...
They said go assassinate him?
Yeah. I think what they're saying is invoke as much terror and violence on these people as possible because we want to see this city burn so that we can justify our actions. And I've just... Like at this point, I wrote this down because I'm like beyond with this. The truth does not matter to this administration unless it serves them. The Constitution does not matter to this administration unless it serves them.
How?
Laws do not matter unless
you know what,
it
you know what
serves
does matter?
Them.
You know what does matter is video. Evidence. And, this is where the American public is so up in arms. And this, I'll call her Miss Gnome, Mr. Miller.
Yeah.
They're not great spokespeople for this.
No.
They're awful.
No. Yeah. I've detested the Department of Homeland Insecurity, I've called it for decades, since it was created. I think it's
you don't
about,
like it.
Oh
yeah.
No, I detest it. It's more about security theater than actually keeping Americans safe. You know, you go to the airport, TSA. Let's be honest, their record of stopping things getting through is pitiful, and so I would say, I agree with part of what Shireen is saying. Okay, this whole organization, DHS, from its inception, was problematic, and I think it should go away.
Interesting.
I see. You know, the Trump administration wanting to leverage it to the nth degree. I see Democrats thinking, oh, we can do this reform and it's good. I just think it's rotten to the core and we need to step back. Now, is there a role for the federal government when it comes to immigration enforcement? Absolutely. I just think it's structured in an organization that it's failing and it will continue to fail because it was set up to do something which was not actually keep Americans safe. Stepping back to the broader issue. Okay. What we have here is a situation where I think the Trump administration is starting to lose broad-based support when it comes to how they're going about immigration enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
People are trying to figure out how does somebody who, you know, we talk about Second Amendments and we have Kristi Noem talking about nobody would bring a gun to a protest. Absolutely. Tons of folks do it.
Usually on the right.
I know various friends who, on the right.
Genuinely.
Legally, they can carry they are not brandishing. But they may be they may be concealed carrying, but they are carrying their weapon. They carry their weapon all the time, wherever they go. And so that notion flies in the face. When Americans see something where they're saying that he's brandishing and they don't see brandishing, they're going, administration's lying.
Yep. Let's take a short break and let's wrap up this really interesting conversation. Natalie Gochner with Shireen Gourbani and John Dougal. Stay tuned, everyone. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on UPR. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. That's BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Shireen Gourbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
And Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is an emotional, taping.
Yeah,
both sides of the aisle. We're all in a little bit of shock over the video of this.
We agree on, things we disagree on. But
it sounds like we kind of agree. I feel like you probably wouldn't like this, but it sounds like you're an abolish ICE guy.
Well, I'm abolish DHS.
Yeah.
and have the federal government do its limited role when it comes to immigration enforcement, but it's structured in such a way it can't effectively do it. I would not say this is state sanctioned assassination.
What are we hearing from the Utah congressional delegation?
Nothing. Almost nothing. And here's why, because they just voted to continue to fund this.
Mm-hmm.
They are fine with it. They are fine with it. I called my senators. I called my representative. I called and said, I just want to make sure I'm understanding. Not only is my representative, Blake Moore, okay with this, just voted to give more funding to it, but is completely fine watching Americans get gunned down. And I should say, there are 9 people that we know of that are being reported that have been killed by ICE this year or in a detention facility. This is this is par for the course for this organization. And we are, I think, only at the beginning of the kind of violence that we're going to learn about that's happening. I'm sure you've seen or heard the children screaming inside of the ICE detention yeah. facility in Texas. He's fine with it. They don't. I called and said, what's his statement? They said, oh, Blake Moore doesn't have one.
I view myself as right of center. And look, you know, when I try to understand these things, I try to read a lot and try and understand. Read the House editorial by The Wall Street Journal this weekend on this topic. They go after the administration. So, mm-hmm. This is trouble.
Yeah, it's trouble for the administration. And when the administration says, we need to get all the facts, but then they put out a biased narrative as they're trying to claim we need to get all the facts. I'm one of those that I come from the perspective, there's more facts out there that we don't know. There's other factors that come into play. From a Utah perspective, a lot of folks are going to say, There's peaceful protesting and then there's rioting. So when you're seeing beer bottles thrown or you're seeing dumpsters on fire, that's rioting. Rioting from my perspective, that is not peaceful protest.
Nor does it justify murder.
Right. Yes. Two wrongs don't make a right. We can have wrongs on both sides.
I'll just give a quick shout out to
where Utah has an issue that we have to resolve is when we talk about illegal immigration. Some will portray that as all illegals need to go, and I would argue that there are different flavors of illegal immigrants.
Yeah.
There are those that are dangerous criminals. Yes, they need to be arrested, detained, deported, whatever it might be. There are others. If you're a child that was brought here when you're 1 month old or 6 months old, and you know no other place, I don't think that's a deport, you're a dangerous criminal. And then we have others who are, they came here peaceably, whether it's go to school or whatever, overstayed their visa. I put that in a very different category. So we do this broad brush, all illegals must go, yet we need to get into the nuance of who's the danger? Who's the threat? Who isn't? And how do we deal with those that are in situations that's like, we can't really deport them because they don't know anything else.
I feel, yes, I agree with you. I just have to say at this point, for me, the Republican Party is so morally bankrupt on this issue that I'm having a hard time even listening to you, who I love, about the, you are correct. Yes, you are right. And at this point, I no longer trust your party on this issue, just given what I'm seeing happening in I'm done. Like, I'm just done. I will also I want to give a quick shout out to the governor of Vermont, a Republican who came out and called what happened on Saturday murder. Hmm. That is the kind of leadership I'd like to see from Governor Cox, who thinks we should, I guess, just continue to disagree better. But I am at a loss for the kind of leadership that we need in this moment from Republicans and have just stopped hoping for it.
And I think most Americans would support if it's truly dangerous criminals that they're enforcing against. But the narrative has been lost, I think.
Yeah, it matters how you do things. Okay,
sure
you
does.
Guys, let's do some other local issues. President Trump, he has urged Utahns to get behind the GOP ballot measure to restore gerrymandering.
I like how you say that. Yeah, that's right.
I guess they're up to 85,000.
Assuming we don't have gerrymandering today, we have gerrymandering in statute. So
I guess they need about 85,000 more signatures statewide. It's a high bar, obviously. They have to get in 26 of the Senate districts.
I think they've only qualified in one. Yep, and the clock is ticking. And hey, if you're out there, please continue to decline to sign.
I signed.
I know you did.
Okay, well, so that's an interesting one. How about Governor Cox's State of the State address?
I would just argue on Prop 4. Mm-hmm. It was pitched as one thing. As implemented, it was completely different. And it undercuts the narrative of what the excuse was behind why we were pushing Prop 4. So
yeah. Well, we got a hot mess on our hands there because nobody wants judges defining these districts. It's the right of the legislature, but
people want
the
right mass.
It's the constitutional duty of the legislature.
Yeah, people have the right to reform their government.
Yes, they do.
And they've got to figure that out.
Yep.
State of the state. The big news there was that the governor was, you know, doubled down on his bell-to-bell phone ban in our schools. But he also did some really nice, I thought it was sort of inaugural type language on the pursuit of happiness. And he talked about how the pursuit of happiness has to do with character, self-mastery, moral formation, and a life oriented towards purpose and public service. You go, Governor. I love that.
Oh, yeah, I appreciate that you feel that way. It has me on the floor for how out of touch it feels with the moment that we are in. Is it about our happiness? Are we in a moment about our happiness?
Yeah. I understand what you're saying.
But a lot of people, the way you talk about it,
you're thinking about like happiness as a feeling. And I think of happiness as a state of flourishing and well-being. So I think it's really appropriate
about. It feels like I don't know that we could be further from a state of flourishment or well-being. Utahns are struggling to afford health care. They cannot figure out how they're going to build a life to have the kind of families they want to have, to buy a home, to breathe the air, or, you know, ensure that a lake will be there so they're not living in a toxic dust bowl. Like, happiness? Give me a break.
Shereen thinks it's off pitch here, John.
And I think the timing, we have to overlay. It's the 250th birthday of America and the founding. And so this is language lifted right out of the Declaration of Independence. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Yeah. Greatest sentence ever written.
So therefore, you know, I think the timing is appropriate. This is one of the rare chances. The governor only gets a chance like this generally once a year. Mm-hmm. And so this is the year of the 250th. I think it's very appropriate.
Yeah,
I'll just say
there's clearly concerns of what it means to pursue happiness and how to get there and challenges and roadblocks, but.
Or a life or a liberty at this point in this country. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, okay, Lieutenant Governor Henderson, she did her review, her office as the chief election officer, to review whether there was any evidence of non-citizens casting a ballot. They spent months, they reviewed 2.1 million people on Utah's voter rolls and did not find a single incidence of a non-citizen voting. And they found one instance of an ineligible individual.
I thought it was one non-citizen registering to vote, but no incidence of any one of them casting a ballot.
So that's a pretty great record. Like, that feels like an election system with a lot of integrity to me.
Yeah. Yeah, it would sound
fair
like
enough.
That.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I wonder if anyone in the legislature is listening.
Okay. We also got, going back to kind of the ICE issue, but the detention center, the Ritchie Group, this is a local real estate developer. They've made clear that they will not be selling their building in Salt Lake City that was rumored to be part of a Homeland Security purchase for this detention center. They've made clear that they're not selling it.
They made clear that they're not selling it, but I just have to direct people's attention to our governor's quote that was in the paper around this saying, "We need this here." The direct quote from our Governor Cox said, "We need this here."
Which surprised me, as I said last week, that I don't think it fits in the culture here. But
yeah, I would firmly agree with you.
And I think it makes a lot of logistic sense because we're a center of activity and, you know, the crossroads of the West. But I don't think our culture will sit well with a detention facility if it's managed in the way we've seen other, you know,
and we don't
migrants
get to manage,
manage it.
That's just the thing. They will manage it. And people, I genuinely believe that we should just expect the same kind of behavior that we're seeing, the same kind of torture, the same.
Apparently, the Ritchie Group thinks that.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, I'm going to say, I think the federal government should do what the federal government's job is. And too often they commandeer state and local governments. And one of the pushes was whether the state or counties needed to change their, you know, incarceration processes and systems and facilities to support federal requirements. And so I would rather have a separate federal facility than placing that burden on our local and state entities.
So we've got a bill this session to enshrine open carry on college campuses. We've also got, you know, momentum to ban it. I have interesting feelings about this one.
Momentum to ban it?
Uh-huh.
Or just a bill to ban it?
Yeah, both.
Okay.
Yeah,
a
both.
Bit of both.
But the idea of, you know, I think of a college setting where you're giving exams, where you're giving lectures, where you have debate, and this notion of people open carrying firearms, especially in the 18 to 24-year-old age group, which is so dominant on college campuses, it causes me some pause.
Yeah, it causes me pause, too. I'll just also add that there was a bill brought forward by a Democrat, Nate Bluin, to enforce that ICE agents don't wear masks as they're conducting their terrorism of the American people at this point. And we couldn't get any support from Republicans for that. Mm-hmm. They think it's totally fine for these individuals to be masked. I just feel like both of these feel so out of touch with the moment that we're in. As a person who taught at the University of Utah, this would be terrifying to me.
John, the notion of an open carry, you know, in a K-12 school, in a daycare facility, on a college campus, I don't like it.
Let me give you a different scenario. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. So at the legislature, at the Capitol, we have folks that open carry. And they'll come open carry and testify, and their message falls flat.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not, yes, you can do that. You have your right to do that and everything else like that. But when you're doing that, there's certain social norms and you're undercutting your message at the same time you're doing that. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Let's do one more topic. What are you hearing on Capitol Hill? John, are you hearing anything about state budget? You hearing anything that's causing you concern?
What I'm hearing is more bills have been numbered and put out. sooner than ever before. Like, you know, session They're starts busy. And there were 500 bills already drafted and ready to go.
You so tracking this, any with PACE or anything?
Not really.
Yeah. Shireen, how about you?
Yeah, I'm, of course, tracking things related to reproductive health care and the ongoing attacks on Planned Parenthood. And I'll just say that those are attacks on Utah patients and on people's access to get a good quality education.
Yeah. Well, our legislature has their hands full. I hope they do a great job. We need them.
Yeah, we need them.
Okay, a great program. This was a lot to take in.
It's a lot.
Listeners.
And I fear we're going to have others similar in the future.
Yeah, fair enough. So Natalie Gochner with John Dougal and Shireen Gorbani. Our program is produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for listening.